Tokanam of children. Pitarau, the two parents. Bandhu, the friends. Trishaha, of the eye. Pakshma, the eyelid. Striyaha, of the woman. Patahi, the husband. Patahi, the protector. Prajanam, of the subjects. Vikshunam, of the beggars. Grihi, the householder. Ajnanam, of the ignorant. Mudaha, the learned. Surit, the friend. Translation: as the father and mother are the friends and maintainers of their children, as the eyelid is the protector of the eye, as the husband is the maintainer and protector of a woman, as the householder is the maintainer and protector of beggars, and as the learned is the friend of the ignorant, so the king is the protector and giver of life to all his subjects. The trees are also subjects of the king. Therefore, they should be given all protection. So you can repeat. As the father and mother are the friends and maintainers of their children. As the eyelid is the protector of the eye. As the husband is the maintainer and protector of a woman. As the householder is the maintainer and protector of beggars. And as the learned is the friend of the ignorant, so the king is the protector and giver of life to all his subjects. The trees are also subjects of the king. Therefore, they should be given protection. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. By the supreme will of the personality of Godhead, there are various protectors and maintainers for helpless living entities. The trees are also considered prajās, subjects of the king. And therefore, the duty of the monarch is to protect even the trees, not to speak of others. The king is duty-bound to protect the living entities in his kingdom. Thus, although the parents are directly responsible for the protection and maintenance of their children, the duty of the king is to see that all parents do their duty properly. Similarly, the king is also responsible for overseeing the other protectors mentioned in this verse. It may also be noted that the beggars who should be maintained by the householders are not professional beggars, but sannyasis and brahmins to whom householders should supply food and clothing. So, tokanam pitarau bandhu drisha pakshma striya patihi pati prajanam vikshunam grihya jnanam buddha surit. So Om Ganat Timurandha Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Ganatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So to be a king is not an easy task, because nowadays, as Drishya Prabhu was mentioning, kings are not in vogue. And even if there are kings or queens, they're just figureheads. Like the Queen of England is just a figurehead. I mean, obviously, I just read the other day that she's going bankrupt anyway, because she spent all of her money on some nonsense. So, in the Vedic times, the kings were there because they had these qualities, and the people very much appreciated them, as Drishya Prabhu was mentioning yesterday. It's not that they had to put a limitation on the terms of the king. For example, now you have term limitations on the President of the United States. Previously in Venezuela, I'm not going to mention the guy's name, he actually eliminated term limitations on himself. And, of course, he's dead right now, because there's ultimately a term limitation. Krishna puts a term limitation on people. But, you know, and also in Russia, they have term limitations. But what happens is that Putin keeps switching jobs from prime minister to president back and forth, and he keeps the power in any case. So he's actually made an end run around the term limitations, you understand? Even though there are term limitations. Why term limitations? Well, first of all, people aren't qualified. Secondly, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And as Prabhupada said in a very ingenious way, if you go to Lanka, you'll become Ravana. In other words, if you have absolute power, you'll become demoniac after some time. So in Kali Yuga, we do need these checks and balances in the American system of government. It's not the ideal system of government, but maybe it's the practical system of government, where you have your judicial branch, legislative branch, and executive branch. And of course, nowadays, of course, pretty much the whole government is frozen because you got the different parties who are opposing the president or opposing each other. And basically, last year was, I think, the least productive year as far as legislation is concerned. Of course, sometimes there are useless rules and regulations being passed. I mean, even we experience that in ISKCON. Sometimes they pass resolutions like can't chant Rade, Rade. Anyway, I think you know about that resolution. At least you can't chant it for more than 2 minutes or something like that, so it'll have a watch. You've overcome your time, you should be stoned or something. So sometimes it's better to have the legislative body stymied. And they're going to pass resolutions that don't mean anything or they're not good. But ultimately, why is it better to have a king? Because there's not so much red tape. If the king is actually saintly and the king is absorbed in religious principles, we'll talk about a king's qualities in a second, then he can be very decisive. You know, this is what needs to be done. Instead of going through all this red tape, and by the time you've gone through all the red tape, the emergency's over anyway, or whatever situation's over anyway. So there are advantages. So how does one become a good king? And I'm going to refer to Grandfather Bhishma's instructions in the Mahabharata, which is in the Shanti Parv. That's at the end. When Grandfather Bhishma is lying on the bed of arrows. And you would think that if you're lying on the bed of arrows, you're not going to be able to speak too clearly or coherently because you're going to be in pain. However, Krishna, in the Mahabharata, describes that Krishna actually said you're not going to experience any pain. You're going to be able to speak very, very clearly. Your mind is going to be perfectly clear. In fact, there were so many arrows in his body, it's described there wasn't like a finger's breadth between the arrows. Can you imagine that? Not in the head. You know, Arjuna just shot everywhere else but in the head. But it was basically, it was like a porcupine. You know what a porcupine is. You know, porcupine means so many pines or sticks coming out of its body that you can't, needles basically, that you can't even see any space between them. So Grandfather Bhishma was approached by Yudhisthira Maharaj. And Yudhisthira Maharaj had previously been advised by Vyasadeva, Srila Vyasadeva, because Yudhisthira Maharaj had just seen the devastation that had occurred in the battle of Kurukshetra. I mean, millions of people killed, women left without their protectors. His own sons were killed. All the sons of the Pandavas were killed. I mean, you can imagine the emotional state of Draupadi. Generally, in most of these Mahabharata movies, it's not depicted. There's a new one where it actually depicts the emotional state of Draupadi, which is done quite dramatically and nicely. But you can imagine her children, for a mother to lose her children like that. You know, all five of Draupadi's children, Gosabhadra's child, and Gataokach, who was Bhimsen's child, you know, was just like lost within a few days during the battle of Kurukshetra. So, and Yudhisthira Maharaj was thinking, you know, this, I've been such a demon. He was actually condemning himself for doing this. He said, just because I wanted power. Actually, he didn't want power, but just because I wanted power, I've done this. And Vyasadeva had to assure him, you know, that you should be kicked, because Yudhisthira Maharaj was getting ready to renounce everything. He was just thought, you know, this is it. I'm not going to be king or I'm not going to be emperor after this. So first, Vyasadeva spoke to him, and then when Yudhisthira Maharaj was kind of calmed down and ready to take the position of king, he wanted to inquire from Grandfather Bhishma, what are the qualities of a kshatriya or of a king? And Grandfather Bhishma spoke very, very nicely in this Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata. And it's interesting, he said the first quality of the king is before the king can go out and conquer anybody else or take over the kingdom. He says he has to be able to conquer himself. It's very interesting. Himself means basically the lower nature. Use the higher nature to conquer the lower nature, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Lower nature means lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, all these different anarthas. In other words, the king has to be free from all these different qualities, or at least be able to control them. As we hear in the Nectar of Instruction, you know, Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam Udara Pashta Vegam, that one has to be able to tolerate. Tolerate means not simply that you express all these things, but you have to suppress them to a certain extent. You have to learn how to deal with them. So, in fact, Grandfather Bhishma said something very interesting. He says that everybody in society, all the four higher classes, because the Shudra is even considered a higher class, because below the Shudra, of course, there's Malechas, Yavanas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, and all those other people, or entities, as the case may be. So he gives the qualities that everybody in society must have. And especially the king. He says the first one is to suppress anger. There again you have this anger. Of course, anger can be utilized under certain circumstances, but not to be controlled by anger, but to control anger, to focus it. I mean, let's say it's like a laser beam. A laser beam is very focused, coherent light. And it can accomplish a lot of things. I mean, you can knock out a satellite, you can knock out an enemy or whatever with a laser beam. But if you just have light going in all sorts of directions, it's not as effective. And a laser beam, of course, has to be focused on the proper object. If you focus on the improper object, it'd be destructive. So anger is very useful. In the battle of Kurukshetra, of course, anger was very, very useful. It's not that Arjuna was just saying, you know, peace and love. It's not that, especially Bhimsen was not saying peace and love. Bhimsen sort of had uncontrolled anger, and Yudhisthira Maharaj had to continually restrain Bhimsen, because Bhimsen was ready to go off at any moment. And Draupadi actually utilized Bhimsen's anger to kill that Kichak in the Virat kingdom. Because she didn't approach, in the Mahabharata it's described, she didn't approach Yudhisthira to say, please protect me. She went to Bhimsen, gave him a hug, and she said, no one else cares for me but you. And he said, all right, what do you want? And she said, Kichak is approaching me. And Bhim said, there's no problem. Let's go to your room, and I'll put on your sari, make believe I'm you, and destroy him. And then when he killed him, he just had so much anger, he pulverized his body so much it was the size of a basketball, and you couldn't tell where the arms or legs or anything else was in the body. Anyway, so the first duty of everyone in society, especially the king, is to suppress anger, and then truth is the second duty, and next duty is justice. Justice is quite interesting. I mean, it's an interesting term. Just like you see depicted in front of many courthouses, this blind justice, you know, blind person with a scale. What that means is that justice has to be given regardless of your own personal attachments. Like even if you're a family member, well, actually the example is given sometimes, if I offend you, you cut it out, you know, but anyway, if you're, a diseased eye, sometimes you have to cut it out because it'll affect the other eye or it has cancer or something like that. I mean, there's cases like that. So even if one's family member is destructive to the kingdom, one has to get rid of one's family member. Of course, Chanaka Pandit talks about that, you know, to save a family, you can give up one family member, to save a village, give up a family, to save your country, give up a village, and to save yourself, you should be willing to give up everything. It's an interesting statement by Chanaka Pandit. So justice means to be equal. And also give people equal opportunity, not to be biased. But to give people, you know, there should be procedures or processes of justice. There shouldn't be a kangaroo court. I don't know. Does anyone know what a kangaroo court is? You probably know. Kangaroo court is just like when it's already pre-decided what's going to happen to someone in the court and you don't have the proper procedure. You know, everybody, like the king, he would always have the proper procedure. Of course, the king would be able to decide very, very quickly, too. It's not that someone could go through like a series of 1,000 appeals, and by the time the last appeal is finished, you know, he's 100 years old and dead anyway. Like you have that story in the Bible about Solomon. You know, the Solomon and the baby. Two ladies were claiming, "It's my baby, it's my baby." And so he thought, well, the way to recognize who the real mother will care for the baby so much, she won't want the baby harmed. So he said, "Okay, so you're both saying it's your baby. Let's just cut the baby in half and give you each a half." And the real mother said, no, let the other lady have the baby. So in other words, he was able to judge. That's a king. A king is able to judge things very, very nicely like that. Obviously, he wasn't going to cut the baby in two. But he made believe he was going to cut the baby in two so he could actually judge us very quickly. So the king has to be very astute in ascertaining whether or not someone's telling a lie or not. Another quality of the king is forgiveness. And you see this, of course, in Lord Ram. That Lord Ram, I mean, there was, Indrajit was killed, of course, by Lakshman, and all the monkeys and everybody wanted to tear apart Indrajit's body. And Lord Ram said, no, our enmity has ended with his death. And he actually put his own cloth on Indrajit's body, and Indrajit was sent back with great honor to his father. And the same thing happened, of course, with Ravana when he killed Ravana. And you see, when the Lord kills someone, he gives that person liberation. So that's a quality of forgiveness. Next quality is that one should have children only with one's own wife. I mean, in Kali Yuga, it's hard for people to understand that one. Because people don't even get married. I was just speaking to someone yesterday, and they were saying, you know, how am I going to get married? Because nobody wants to marry anymore. They just want to live together, and then maybe it works out after 20 years and 3 children, then get married. Because they're afraid of a divorce, and if there's a divorce, then the man's afraid the money's going to be taken away. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. So anyway, people should be married. People should have children with their own wife. Next one is cleanliness. And the next one is avoiding quarrel unnecessarily. Simplicity. And the last one is in reference to this particular verse is maintaining a dependence, which is very, very nice. So these are the qualities that a king, and everybody, actually everyone in society, everyone in the higher classes is supposed to have. And there's other instructions. There are actually so many instructions given by grandfather Bhishma, tomorrow is Yudhisthira. So I'm going to mention some of these instructions. That he said, another instruction is before you accept a servant, he deals a lot with servants. Like how to accept servants or people who work under you or assistants and things like that. He says you should be very careful to examine a servant before accepting him to make sure that they're not lusty or greedy or envious. And he gives an interesting story. Grandfather Bhishma tells a very interesting story. And this is very similar to the Punarmushika Bhava story that Prabhupada tells. He said, once upon a time, there was a Brahmin. And this Brahmin in the forest had, somehow or other was taking care of this dog. You know, anyway, taking care of the dog. And the dog, this Brahmin was so advanced in Krishna consciousness that all the animals were very peaceful around him. They would come to him and offer obeisances, and there were, you know, tigers and deers and everything that would just come and be nice to the Brahmin. But this dog was being harassed by one tiger, so he just, the dog went to the Brahmin, and the Brahmin said, all right, let's see what I can do about this, so you can become a tiger. And the dog became a tiger, became very happy, he was a tiger. But then there was an elephant that was harassing the tiger. He said, okay, you become an elephant. And then there was a lion that was harassing the elephant. And said, all right, become a lion. And then there was this big beast, like an eight-legged Sharada beast, it's mentioned, and had eyes on his forehead or something like that. You know, really terrible thing. Actually, there are all these animals around that just haven't been seen. Someone was just telling me last night about this fish. It's like a Timangilla fish that they actually have pictures of. I forget the name of the fish. There's actually pictures and movies on the internet how they bite a whale in two. Be careful when you're swimming. So the Sharada beast was actually harassing the previous dog. And so the Brahmin said, you know, all right, you become that beast. And then the beast basically looked at the Brahmin and said, Shrira Vijajat, Tendriya Jehikala, you know, the Prashadam prayer. And the Brahmin said, all right, you're going to be a dog again. And then the Brahmin rejected the dog. The dog had to go away and realized it made a mistake. So the reason that story is told is to illustrate you have to examine very, very carefully someone before you accept them as your assistant or servant. You know, all their qualities, if they're envious, lazy, or any of these qualities, don't accept them. And not only that, there's many instructions in regard to servants. He also says that when you have a servant, don't become overly familiar or friendly with the servants. Because if that happens, then they will not respect you anymore. And then they won't carry out their duties nicely. So that's instructions in regard to servants. Another instruction is in regard to work. He said you should never be idle. A king or a kshatriya should never be idle at all. In other words, always be active. And give your servants, he said, equal facility. In other words, you shouldn't live high in the hog, so to speak. High in the hog means basically, you know, very opulently, and have your servants live in hovels. They should have equal facility. Do you have, of course, not exactly equal to a king. Obviously, they're not going to have a palace and everything like that, but they should have basic facilities for their own life. And you should not be eating more opulently than your servants. That's a very interesting statement, especially for sannyasis who like mahaprasadam. That's not my problem. So you should not be eating more opulently than your servants. And another quality is that a kshatriya should be very decisive, not fickle. Fickle means, you know, you change your mind all the time. Like you see, in the case of the Mahabharata, you have Dhritarashtra, who makes a particular decision, and Duryodhana comes and just says, you know, Dad, how can you do this to me? And because of his attachment to his son, he changes his decision. You know, at one point, Grandfather Bhishma says to Dhritarashtra, you should get rid of this Shakuni. Shakuni was Mamashri uncle. Uncle on mother's side. That's what's called Mamashri. So, you should get rid of him. And Dhritarashtra said, all right, I understand. He's the cause of all the problems. Let's get rid of the guy. And so they're trying to get rid of the guy, and then all of a sudden, Duryodhana threatens something, and Dhritarashtra changes his mind. Because he's controlled by his emotions. A real Kshatriya has to be very decisive. Of course, if there's no information, a Kshatriya can change his opinion. But Grandfather Bhishma said, in general, he has to make a decision and stick to a decision. In fact, there are so many rules and regulations for Kshatriya or being a king that it's described in the Mahabharata that Lord Brahma compiled 100,000 chapters about kingly duties and qualities of a king. I mean, 100,000 chapters. That's pretty interesting. So anyway, so these are some of the qualities, and what's mentioned here in the verse in particular, which is very interesting, is to see all the living entities like his children. In other words, to not distinguish between his own children or his own wife or his own family and others in the kingdom. So, of course, this is perfectly epitomized in the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra, where Lord Ramchandra understood in order to properly carry out his kingly duties, he had to have the loyalty of the citizens. In order to have the loyalty of the citizens, then they couldn't be going around criticizing him. And what they were criticizing, even there were some lower class people, like Washerman, who was criticizing Lord Ram for accepting Sita back after being in the house of another man. And Lord Ram understood that this would impede his duties if he actually continued to have Sita Devi. So he sacrificed Sita Devi, who was, I mean, didn't sacrifice her in a fire, but he sent her away, and he was so attached to her. I mean, it's Lakshmi, Sita Devi. Sita and Ram are completely inseparable. So for the good of the kingdom, he considered the washerman or the citizens to be as important as his own wife. Not less important, as important as his own wife, which is interesting. Of course, even Prabhupada said in regard to the householders, not that they have to consider everyone in the village the same as their own wife, but Prabhupada said that they consider even the bugs in the household to be like their children. I mean, I think very few people come to that standard, isn't it? I'm sure that those of you who are householders are not looking at the little mosquitoes and cockroaches and getting very loving with them. But that's actually the injunction, Prabhupada said. And you see in the case of Yudhisthira, ultimately in the Mahabharata, Yudhisthira was ready to give so much protection to a dog that he was willing to forego going to heaven. I mean, can you imagine? That's complete self-sacrifice. I mean, if Indra came to me and said, yeah, you got to go to heaven, you have time to go to heaven, but you can't take your disciples with you. I said, that's all right, let them stay. You know, I gotta have a vacation. So, but Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was just so equipoised, you know. Vidya Vinayasam Pane Brahmani Gavi Hashtani Shuni Chaivas Vapaki Cha Pandita Samadarshana. This Bhagavad Gita. When it sees equal vision, learned and gentle Brahman, a dog, dog eater, outcast, etc. Yastu sarvani bhutani yatmane vanu pashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatonu bhikikushti. That's from his Upanishad. Well, one should see all living entities as part and parcel of Krishna, because real family, you know. I mean, there's a spiritual way to do it. It's not just an artificial imposition that I have to see everyone equally, equal to my children. How am I going to do that? But you actually see that Krishna's aham bija pradapita, Krishna's the father. And he's the father where all his children, all these other relationships are just very, very temporary. You know, because we've had so many temporary fathers, so many temporary mothers, so many temporary children, so many temporary wives, so many temporary husbands, so many temporary countries, isn't it? Like now we're Americans. Previously, in a previous life, we were Martians. I mean, who's going to fight for Mars now? And then we were Klingons. I don't know if you know what that means. Maybe we were part of the clone army at one point. So, I mean, but our permanent relationship, eternal relationship, is Krishna and everybody, and all living entities, including the trees, they're all our brothers and sisters. And that means we have to stick up for our brothers and sisters. So that's how the king sees. And Yudhisthira saw on that spiritual platform. Therefore, he was able to even sacrifice going to heaven to take care of the dog. Of course, ultimately, it was revealed the dog was Yamaraj, and the Yamaraj was testing him. And ultimately, he did go to, you know, heaven, or actually went back to Godhead. So this is how the king sees equally. And even protects the trees, because the tree is his brother. Like St. Francis of Assisi. You know, he considered all the animals and plants and everything to be brothers and sisters. And Prabhupada actually said that's first-class God consciousness. That was Prabhupada's statement. So, anyway, any questions here about qualities of the king or how to see things equally?
I'm reminded of the story of Shiva and Hussein. And how that's very similar.
He himself fasted because the dog didn't get his food that night. And of course, ultimately, that dog went back to Godhead, but because the dog had the mercy of the Vaishnavas. But that's how a real devotee feels. I mean, there's stories about Prabhupada. There was a bug on a flower once, and Prabhupada said to the devotees, take the bug and put him outside. You know, so Prabhupada was very, very cool. And Prabhupada wouldn't even swat a mosquito until a mosquito attacked it. You know, there's that story Shruti Kirti tells, that Prabhupada was underneath the mosquito net. Somehow the mosquito had gotten into the net, underneath the net, and there was a mosquito like that. And Shruti Kirti Prabhu said, should we kill him? Prabhupada said, no, you can't kill him until he attacks. Because the Vedic injunction, if someone gives you poison, steals your wife, sets your house on fire, then you can kill him. and so then the mosquito landed on Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, kill him. Because he was attacking. I mean, for self-defense, that's a different thing. But Prabhupada had so much compassion like that. I mean, you know, Prabhupada did not hate any living entity. He just felt compassion for all living entities. Prabhupada said to us, when we were feeding old prasadam bread to the ducks in the duck pond in Dallas, Texas, when it was the temple was at Turtle Creek at that time, Prabhupada said that those ducks will become human beings in the next life. Because Prabhupada was feeling compassion for the ducks. So, yeah.
I was just thinking about the proper application of anger, because once motivating a person to become angry before a situation or somebody else, and it's not easy to control the anger because it's a selection one, rather than actually apply it at the right time for the right motivation for the right effect.
It takes a lot of practice to control anger. I mean, you just have to. It's like controlling the higher self, controlling the lower self with the higher self. The higher self is the intelligence connected with super soul. You just have to think: is this dharmic? That's the point. I mean, that's one of the first instructions. I actually forgot about it. That the Yudhisthira was given by Grandfather Bhishma. That one should always act dharmically. He said, even if it means killing your guru. Even if it means, well, like Arjuna. Arjuna, you know, just the Arjuna, of course, killed Drona. Yeah, if it's dharmic, not that killing your guru is dharmic, forget it. I don't want to give people that impression. Maybe the last day of my life, you know, people took to that understanding. But